Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture even,
love,
and life
in New York City. I am Connor McDowell.
And I'm Dylan McDowell, and we are back again with an absolutely iconic special guest. But before we get there, because I know that I don't want to waste too much time, but we do need to just kind of catch up on everything that's been going on of late.
It's been like a wild couple weeks, for sure. And a sad couple weeks. I mean, I hate to like start this out on a downer, but I feel like we were just talking earlier, like 2020, it feels like you're like a pinata that just keeps getting hit with a baseball bat. Like it is, and there's no candy coming out. They just keep hitting you because it's like one thing after another. And unfortunately we lost several important figures in the music industry, in the history of America. I mean, it has just been, it's been brutal. I have to say, like this past week was rough with obviously the sad loss of Naya Rivera, most known from Glee. That was devastating.
Absolutely shocking. And we strayed away from talking about it last week because I think there was a part of me that still held out hope that she was okay and that she hit something had just, I don't know. I know it was delusional, but I just am someone who always tries to look for hope and like hold on in some way. And I mean, what she meant to you and I, Connor, I mean, especially you, who really connected to Santana for some reason.
I know. I don't know why. I don't know why, but she, I think like you could tell she put a lot of herself in that performance. And when she starts singing, I think the Madonna episode of Glee season one is when we first heard her sing. She just had a gift. I mean, unbelievable. Some of my favorite Glee covers are from her. I mean, I mentioned this last time we talked, but like her cover of Songbird by Fleetwood Mac, mm-hmm. her cover of Mine by Taylor Swift, what Shake It Off by Florence and the Machine, like truly she could do it. And she, I remember there was like a few years there where there was like rumors about her like feuding with Lea Michele or all these different things that were like, there was like drama, and it kind of made it seem like Naya was difficult. But as I'm like learning about her and learning about like what her castmates had to say about her, I think she was just a completely real, completely upfront, no bullshit person. And mm-hmm. there's not enough people like that in the world. And I think it's especially hard to be like that when you're a woman, because people immediately call you difficult or, you know, a bad word or something.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, she just kept it real. And she, like, I was listening to this interview that she did with a couple of her Glee castmates, and they were just saying that, like, she would be the first person to be like, something's wrong. Like, you're not eating, or I can tell that you've been down lately. Like, what's going on? And I think that can be polarizing, but I think, like, what a gift to have that as a person, to be so upfront and in touch with others and yourself. And I know that she loved her child, and it is truly a tragedy, and may she rest in peace, but her legacy does live on. And mm-hmm. I know we were talking with our friend Poot about how her second act was coming. Like, there was certainly something I would have always loved to have seen her on Broadway, or some sort of musical film, something, because her star power was just there, actress and star. I just, so sad. I'm like rambling about Naya now.
No, I think it's important to eulogize her and celebrate her. And something that I've been thinking a lot about is how I just hope she knew how much she meant to the world, because so often we only celebrate those once they've passed. And I see all these pieces of the 10 best covers she did on Glee, or what she meant to Latinx queer kids. And I hope that she knew all of that. And I think that we really need to pay respects and be grateful and tell people how much they're loved, because the time is so short. And not to segue too much, oh my gosh, our guest just held up their mug and it says, "You are loved." And that, I have chills by the cosmic connection there. Okay, we're gonna get into it. But I also have to mention, you know, Nick Cordero, a beloved member of the Broadway community, one of the most generous and kind people. I had the chance to work with him on his 54 Below solo show last year. And I just remember him being down for everything. I remember his beautiful wife, Amanda, and I remember how excited he was to become a dad. She was either very pregnant or just about to give birth to Elvis around this time. And he was so worried that no one was going to come to his show. And he had two nights and they were both packed.
I'm going to cry. I can't.
The world is now mourning him collectively. And it's just, you know, one of those things, like, it was by no fault of his own that he got COVID. And we didn't know enough yet. And I think, you know, we'll include links and everything, but if anyone has any money, any little extra something while the weekly $600 stipend with the unemployment's coming through still, and hopefully it gets extended, please help this incredible single mother, Amanda. Now, her positivity through all of this has been remarkable, and I don't know, I will support her forever. And she's also an Ohio girl, what, like us, so we gotta have that connection, but... You know, it's got to be hard enough to be in the industry, and then to have something else like that happen is just unthinkable. So our hearts are with Naya Rivera's family, her son, and with Nick Cordero's family and his son. And it's been rough, but, you know, we have to just keep looking towards the positive and love one another and stay true. Is this like Sunday church right now all of a sudden? Like, what's
this
happening?
This is a Super Soul Sunday with Oprah. But you know what? I think, like, the good thing that I'm reminded of through all of this sadness is the idea that we do need to be as present as possible and as loving as possible with the people in our lives, because it could be over like that, you know? So, I mean, I suppose it's not a good thing, but it is – it's a nice reminder in this time of sadness that I can do better in my life and try to express love and take it, you know? Anyway, okay, we're being drama.
There is someone here with us today who I think exemplifies love, exemplifies care, is also a mother, and is someone who I know that literally thousands of people around the entire world, and we'll explain why, look up to this person and love our guest today. We are so grateful to Haley Pichoun, former guest, friend of drama.
Yes.
Our dramatic sister, as we've called her, who has connected us today. And Connor, I would love for you to read the credits and bring her in.
Here we go. All right. Our guest today has been defying gravity and records as the distinguished person to play Ms. Elphaba Thropp in Wicked in more countries and companies of the show than anyone in the history of Wicked. Before she could fly, she danced. Having begun her career as a child on the national tour of The King and I, she went on to be a dancing queen in Mamma Mia. Her powerhouse vocals came through as she then joined the Las Vegas company of the Queen Jukebox musical, We Will Rock You, covering the lead role of Scaramucci. Ooh. She became the Green Girl in what has been a 13-year journey as she's appeared in Wicked on Broadway, London, Chicago, on both the first and second national tours in Seoul, Korea, and Sydney, Australia. She's the mother to her beautiful daughter, Jules, bestie to our lovely friend and former guest, Haley Pichoun, and will likely always be cleaning off specks of green makeup forever. Please welcome to drama, Jenny DeNoia.
Thanks, guys. It's so good to be here. That was a really nice introduction. Thanks. <I'll shame.
laughs> Oh my God. Wow. We're so happy to have you here. Like, I've known who you are for probably as long as I've known what Wicked was.
That's so wild to me when anybody ever says that. I'm like, you know who I am? Like, I don't know. It's just like...
An iconic Elphaba and actress and star who has just like... You've like remained a part of the conversation and the zeitgeist for so many of us for so many years. And I don't know how your voice has maintained.
Oh, no, I don't know either. Honestly, I have no clue where it comes from, but it's like instinct. It just like kind of kicks in.
Wait, really quick, Jenny, before we jump into talking about Wicked and your fabulous career, did you watch Glee when it was on TV?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I did watch Glee. I loved it. I thought it was so fascinating. And it was perfect for the time when it came out, because we needed to have like people coming to theater and loving theater, and that generation, like your generation, grew up loving that, which I think like it just infused like our live theater world with like TV theater, like perfectly together. I loved it.
Yes, completely agree. It was like the marriage of theater and just the cast, of course, had so many Broadway, you know, your green sister, Idina Menzel, for example, was there and just so many different icons. But yeah, so that whole thing with Naya has just been absolutely crazy.
I know, hearing you guys talk about it, it's just so sad. And I think she probably did know how important she was, because it seemed like her friends that have been speaking out more recently, like, they really appreciated that raw honesty that she always would give. And something about her that I always was just so, like, connected with her, because her eyes are so, like, deep and, like, magnetic. Like, it's just like you have to watch her when she's on screen. And it is so sad, and especially for her little boy, who she was very, very open about how, like, being a mom was her biggest and best role ever, and how she loved it so much. So it's just, and being a mom myself to a 4.5-year-old, it, like, makes me get choked up thinking about him. Ugh, it's just so sad.
Yeah. And you have a daughter, Jules.
I do. She's also magnetic as well, and I'm madly in love with her. She teaches me more than I could ever even describe in words, but this is her self-portrait.
Oh, gorgeous. You have an artist in the house.
Yeah, she's a little painter. She's very creative, which I love. And in so many ways, not just, like, she loves music, she loves art, she loves, you know, playing pretend all day long.
I love that sense of wonder that kids have. It's so remarkable.
Amazing. It is. It really is.
Does she know Wicked? Like, has she seen pictures of you as Elphaba?
Yes. She actually came to see me in Wicked. I wish I could post the pictures, but she took the paintbrush and painted her face for you. I'll show you guys later, but when I can find it. But yeah, she came with one of my babysitters. This was maybe last year around this time. And she watched the entire thing. I could not believe it, because we had her sitting at the back, like in the sound booth. And, you know, I was nervous that she was going to, like, throw a fit, or, you know, be like, during I'm Not That Girl screaming, like the one child that has to be taken out of.
Always, right?
Yeah, always. But she was fascinated. She loved it. And she really, like, got some of the things. Like, later on, she has this doll that one of the dressers made for me a couple years back, and it's an Elphaba doll, and she calls it Mommy Doll. And she was, like, holding it after the performance. She was going with the head, like, and wiggling the head, and
toss toss.
And she now does it. She can do the full toss toss. but she, when she was really young, when she was, like, maybe she was 8 months old, I went back to work. This was my first time.
I'm sorry, what?
I know. I was pregnant with her while I was, so I went to London. I finished my West End run. And then I came back. I was home for about a week and a half, got pregnant. Didn't know. And I went out to LA to close the first national tour. And 2 weeks into my run there, I was like, ooh, I feel a little funny. Like, my voice feels different. And sure enough, I found out I was pregnant there. And I finished playing Elphaba there for like 5 weeks. And then I came to Broadway to fill in for the Elphaba for another 4.5 weeks, maybe.
Oh my God.
So I played Elphaba for my first trimester, which was so wild and different. But yeah, so she's been on Broadway. Jules has been on Broadway already.
She has. She's flown.
She's flown a few times, yeah. But yeah, she watched me get painted when she was about like 1 year old. She was just like fascinated by the paint, but it didn't scare her. So I was just grateful for that. But yeah, that was a long-winded answer to that.
No, not at all. That is so cute. And you know, I'm thinking about the book Wicked by Gregory Maguire. Elphaba does get pregnant in the book.
Oh, wow. See,
yes,
I told myself, because I joined the show in Chicago, and I was like, you know what? I know the book is very dark and different, and the musical is, they're you know, the same-ish story, but they're very different. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to read the book when I'm done with the show. And now 13 years later, I have still not read the book.
That's so funny.
I really do consider them to be so different. And I won't say anything else about it just to keep you, leave some surprises out there. But I remember when I was like,
and just wait till you find out who the father is.
Mm-hmm. It's like a Jerry Springer special, honestly. But I remember being 12 or 13 when we discovered Wicked and thinking, oh, there's a book. Not a book for a 12-year-old. It is so dark. The animal characters are prime, like very, very big characters in the book. Anyways, I don't want to talk about it too much, but I remember like having to like justify my love of Wicked and like the book and thinking, oh, they're just different. Like I just have to accept that they're different. And it's really interesting. Elphaba is very different in the book as well.
I've heard a few tidbits.
I do have a question about your portrayal of Elphaba. Because you started playing her in, was it 2006 or 7?
In 2006, I was a dancer swing in the show.
Okay.
And then about 8 months into my run there, I became like an emergency cover because somebody hurt themselves. And at that point, the show had only been open for 3-ish years. And, you know, there wasn't like a pool of people in New York or Chicago who they could pull from. So I internally covered it. And, I ended up going on, so I just remained like an understudy for like a good year and a half, and then I became the standby there. So I guess around 2008, I became the standby, and that's when I started, I guess, quote unquote, playing her.
Okay, cool. Oh, wow, I feel like that's pretty rare to be able to kind of rise that quickly through the show.
Yeah, I mean it. Gosh, it felt long. It felt really long. Because then, you know, after I became the standby, I was a standby for a really long time. And from 2008 to 2013, I was a standby. And in and out of companies as well. So I was a standby. After Chicago closed, I became the standby on Broadway. And I was there for 2.5 years as a standby. And during that time, you know, I really, obviously I wanted to play the role at some point, but looking back now, I'm so grateful I got that long amount of time as a standby to really learn the show in my body and like the whole pace of the show, because I guess that's an answer to your question from earlier is how have I been able to sustain this? But it's because I had a really good like foundation from the beginning, and I'm so grateful that I had that time to like build into like being able to sustain an 8-show week for a long period of time once I was playing it.
Yeah. Wow. So when you first started playing the role versus, I mean, you probably played her sometime earlier this year. I'm sure you went on like in February or March. How much of your characterization of the role changed over those years?
Oh, it's massively changed. And it's wild to me that I can still find moments and like light bulbs will go off in my brain. Like, oh my God, that's what this means. And I really, it's not that I'm changing anything. It's just that it's becoming more layered and deeper. And I think that just comes with age, you know, and I'm one of those people, like I'm a dancer first and I didn't start taking like proper voice lessons until I was understudying Elphaba.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'd never taken like an acting class. Like I'd never done that training because everything was so geared at dance. And, you know, I think that for me, my process has really just been like with my life, you know, what's happening for me personally? How do I feel? What's happening in our world? You know, I was playing Elphaba on Broadway in 2016 during that fateful time. And it was, you know, I mean, and that's a personal opinion of mine, but, you know, that massively changed for me because there's a very political message within Wicked as well. And you can take that in all different ways, you know,
absolutely,
not politics, but like, you know, in general, how we treat people, how we look at differences in not the greatest ways and not good ways at all. So it's really just changed with my life and what's been happening for me personally. It's wild. It's It's really beautiful too. And that's why I think I keep going back, because I just continue to learn and become a better human and actor at the same time, I guess.
I mean, Elphaba is one of the most iconic Broadway characters in theater history, I think. And there's just so much there. And the songs in Wicked, it was one of the musicals that got me into theater in general. And I was obsessed with it for like several years, and then kind of like went away from it, you know, moved on through high school and college. It was always there, and it was always something I loved. But going back to and seeing Wicked for the first time after I finished, I think it was at the, it was actually at the 15-year performance. We went and saw the show. Jenny, I was sobbing, watching Wicked, realizing, because at that point I had finally moved to New York. I was like, you know, doing my thing, trying to figure out my spot in the industry, and was watching this show that had meant so much to me through my younger years. And it was specifically the character, like, Defying Gravity. I was like, of course, there's such an emotional moment there, but during The Wizard and I, that song, I think, might be like one of the best I Want songs ever, but it is so beautiful. Just Elphaba's entire character progression. And I, watching the show, you know, at age 25, as opposed to age 14 or however young I was when I first saw it, it was like seeing it for the first time in new eyes, and finally like understanding how political it is, or I should say how timely it still is. You know, they're talking about putting animals in cages, and meanwhile, people are being put in cages. And it's like the script didn't change. Nothing changed about Wicked. It is just so relevant and powerful. And I was learning new things while watching it. And I thought, gosh, what a magical piece of art that it continues to speak to people all this time later and speak to myself. I remember, Dylan, do you remember me sobbing like at intermission?
Fully sobbing.
You were like, what's wrong? You were like, what's wrong? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I think it's just amazing. And I think Elphaba is just the journey she goes on and the journey Glinda goes on. Amazing. And I think everyone can see themselves in it. And there's a reason Wicked's been on Broadway for 17 years, almost 17, 18 years.
Almost 18, I'm bad with
math. I think.
Jenny, same.
I know, me too. I'm like, I need it. So you've played Elphaba in so many different cities, so many different countries. Would you say that the audience is very different in different parts of the country and I guess different parts of the world? Like, do they respond to Wicked?
No, and that's what, like, it kind of ties back to what you're saying. It's, this show is, that's what's so special about it, is that it's just so empowering. No matter your age or your gender, your race, anything, like, it, you can find a piece in each character, and in the, even just with the ensemble, with the, that's why Wicked is so special. They just did it perfectly. It really is just so perfect, but it's the same everywhere. And I was expecting, especially in Korea, because that was the one country that I did it in, that, you know, English isn't their first language. We did it in English, obviously. But I was with the Australian company, so they were on their Asia tour, and I had previously done it with them in Sydney, so they brought me back for just their Seoul Korea portion, which was 5 months in Seoul. And the audiences there, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Korea, but they were so excited. Like, I mean, you're literally a rock star there when you're on stage and when they can come to you. But with translators and everything, you could tell that they got it. They got the message. They didn't grow up watching The Wizard of Oz. That's not part of their culture. But the story of Wicked and the two female leads, and, you know, I mean, it just spoke to them just the same. It was amazing. I mean, the only difference in Korea was that there was a bit of a lag on applause and laughter for jokes, because they were reading prompters. And there's a few different lines, like, while it seems the artichoke is steamed, artichokes apparently aren't very common in Korea, so they changed it to, well, it seems the broccoli is steamed.
The broccoli steamed.
Winnie Holzman, genius playwright here, making this swap. That's iconic.
It was really special. It was all of those experiences.
In other countries, this might be a silly question, but do they use American accents when performing Wicked, like for example in London or I guess Australia, or do they use
In London they all use British accents or their own accent. I don't know if you guys, I mean, I didn't see it in London originally when Adina was there, but every character was like from a different kind of part of Europe, it seemed. So there was like an Irish accent, there was, you know, a British accent. I can't remember all of them, but yeah, they use British accents there. And they have a few changed words as well. I think it was instead of, we haven't received our room. Oh God, now I'm like forgetting the lines. Quarantine. they would say like my room allocations.
Oh, they don't say like, I haven't gotten my flat allocation yet.
A room allocation, something like that, I think. But in Australia, they did it in American accents. Oh, but in London, the wizard is American accent.
Oh yeah. Oh, that gave me chills. That is so Ooh. Cool. That tracks completely.
It makes sense, and it was very helpful for me because I came in not with a British accent, and if you asked me to do a British accent, I would need some training. I'm not very good with accents. But yeah, I had to sing though with like a really hard T to match with Glinda when I would sing with Glinda. So it was all defying gravity. Like, and I was hitting my T's very hard. It was interesting because when I got back, I was singing defying gravity T.
That is gravity.
That's the T. I have a Wicked thought, and I'm like jumping on this, and I feel like I'm like being such a Wicked fanboy here, but okay, can you refresh my memory? This is like some inside baseball, okay, sports reference. I know your jaw's on the floor. You're like, oh my God, he does it all. But did Elphaba used to do like an extended dance with
yes,
a wizard in Wonderful? Why'd they cut that?
I'm not sure why. So all those changes happened when London opened. So when they built the show in London, they built it a little differently. They added some stuff like that whole scene that happens when Elphaba comes in with the book. And she's like, hey, like she bumps into Fiero for the first time. That was all added. That wasn't there before.
Oh, wow.
All of the, you know, the books in Dancing Through Life, where the kids slap them together, that was not there either. Like, we did all this different choreography before that, which was weird because I was a swing first and a dancer first, so I learned the whole show that way. And then 8 months later, had to relearn all of 9 tracks, you know, in this whole different way. Oh. But yes, there was a dance in Wonderful, and then we did like a little waltzy thing. And then we would do like, we're off to see the wizard kind of steps. Yeah. But yeah, they cut that. And they added a few little bits and bobs in there. But yeah, I'm not sure why. I think they just felt like it was tighter. Like it felt tighter and it made the story kind of move a little quicker.
I know that some of the Glinda wigs changed too over the years.
Yeah, they've definitely, everything has gotten like more like, I don't know how to explain that, but just more like a balloon. Like if you were to blow up a balloon, just bigger, I guess. But like the bubble dress has just like progressively gotten bigger. I don't know if you've seen like Kristen Chenoweth's bubble dress. I've seen a few photos and it's almost like straight down, it seems like, compared to like now it's like huge, but yeah.
Full yeah. hoop skirt, like it's amazing. One last thing about accents is we saw Carrie Ellis do it on Broadway. Were you with the? I would assume you were with the show at the time. It was like 2008.
I was not when she was there. I think I joined after okay. she left. I replaced her in London, but which I was like, oh my God, I was a fan. I was fangirling for sure. Yeah, I fangirl a lot of the Elphabas, because they're all great. Every Elphaba has like something so special. But did Carrie do an American accent on Broadway?
She did an American accent, except there was only one moment where it peeked through. It was like during For Good, when she says, "I'm limited, just look at me." It just came out as like, "Just look at me." Like it was all of a sudden, it was like, I was like, "Oh, didn't she do this the whole time?"
She was great. And you know who was playing Fiera? It was Aaron Tveit.
My world. I know. Forever and always.
Oh my God. He's going to be in a Hallmark movie.
He's so talented and he's so dreamy.
Of course.
Yeah.
So dreamy. Did you get a chance to see Moulin Rouge or no? Because I guess you've been in Wicked, so
yeah, I never got a chance to see it. You know, I hope so.
One day,
I hope so soon.
Now, because you went back to being standby, was it last summer or two? When you're standby for Wicked, is it where you have to be in the building, or can you kind of be within like a certain mile radius?
You know, we have to be in the building.
Okay.
I think they learned early on, because before I was a standby on Broadway the first time in 2009, I think they used to have a radius that they could be at, but they had some issues because when Elphaba's down, she's down. So you have to be ready to get in that makeup. And that makeup, you know, depending on how down the Elphaba is, like you need to be there to get makeup done. But yeah, we have to be in the building. We can leave at a certain point. Because if you think about it, once Elphaba steps on stage for the second act, she's on stage. She does not have any breaks, no bathroom breaks, and so she's going through. Yeah.
Wow. Now I have to ask, just because we love Haley, we've mentioned Haley Patchoun a few times. What was it like playing opposite her on tour? God. Correct.
Yes, on tour, and this was my first time playing the role full time. So that made it really special for me. But like, Haley is, she's my best friend. She's my best friend. And I don't know what I'd do without her in my life. She's probably one of the most supportive, loving, generous, I mean, caring person I could go on and on about her. But being on stage with her, well, if you think about it, like these two women like hate each other in the beginning and then they're obsessed with each other. And that's not how Haley and I were. We loved each other from the start. But you really like it's a very difficult show to do. These two roles, especially because it's long. It's very strenuous on your body, your voice, physically, and it's very emotional. And having her in her strong woman lady power that she has, it was a gift. It was a true gift, and she has remained my best friend since then. I talked to her right before I talked to you guys. Yeah, but speaking of like when you guys were talking about Naya Rivera, like Haley's that same person. She will speak up for herself and speak up for others. And we need more people like her in this world. So I'm very fortunate to have her as my family, honestly.
Oh, that is so good. I honestly got emotional when you were talking about her.
You know, my heart starts to pound, but yeah.
It reminded me of when Oprah was talking about Gayle King on Barbara Walters. She's like, she is the mother a sister I never had, whatever. But no, Haley is amazing. We loved her, and then we got set up with her to do an episode of our show together, and I feel like we clicked immediately. Like we were just going. We talked about The Bachelor.
I listened to it because I watched The Bachelor too, so I'm all about The Bachelor and Bachelorette. But I listened to it. She's like, I that's what I said to her on the phone. I was like, Haley, you guys talked like a lot. Like I don't know if I'm anything to talk about in the way that you guys talk, because it was like, yeah. But she's so good.
Confirm, we're doing this one of my favorite episodes we've done in a long time. So,
wait, okay, Jenny, The Bachelorette started filming on Friday. All of them.
I love podcasts. I'm like a podcast junkie. And so I listened to one and they were talking about how it was working with like getting tested for the virus and quarantine beforehand. I mean, it's so wild what they have to go through now.
I know. And did you hear that there's going to be 41 men there for Claire? I think it's
wow. Ever. Wait, like on the show?
Yeah. 41 suitors.
Isn't it usually like 28 or 30?
Yeah, and 17 of them are from the originally announced cast that they, because they were supposed to start filming and then it got shut down like the day after Broadway got shut down. And then, so 17, I think, did I say that right? 17 of them are from that cast and then 25 of them are new. Two of them are from Cleveland, Dylan.
I love that.
I love Cleveland. Yes.
So fun. That's where we're currently at now.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Haley and I, we lived together in Cleveland on tour and it was during Christmas. And it was a really special,
yes.
It was a really special one. Yeah.
That's so cute. I love that. But yeah, I can't believe they started filming already. I guess they're at this huge resort and it's going to be spacious and it's going to feel like any normal season of The Bachelor, I guess. I doubt they'll air the COVID talk on the show. But I'm sure that's one of the big things that they'll all be talking about.
Wondering that too, if they were going to like talk about it in their, you know, their interviews, like when you pan to like them sitting in a spot and doing their, whatever they call them. But yeah, I wonder. I also heard that they were living in their own rooms. Like they had their own rooms to themselves. I don't know.
Cool.
Yeah. Which is so different because that takes the whole aspect away of like living in the house together, like having the drama that happens
That's right.
Being in the house together, you know? So it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, all the tension. Because normally, I guess, they can't escape each other. They're in, like, a hotel suite or something as it goes on. So that's a good point. This is going to be different.
What are your thoughts on Claire, Jenny?
I love her, and she gives me hope.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, I think she's so strong, and, like, every interview I've listened to of her more recently, I'm just like, this is a great woman to have the Bachelorette, because she's just like, she knows who she is right now in her life, and she knows what she deserves, and she's not going to take any, you know, BS that's going to probably come up. So I'm really, really excited, and I'm rooting for her, and I just hope it works out. I mean, I feel like I talk about these people like I know them. But
well, in a way, they've opened up their lives to us. That's what's weird about reality TV is we do know like everything about them. And in some cases, they've been in our lives for years. So we want to see them succeed, you know? I think Claire's awesome. She's another person who's going to be honest, doesn't put up with anything. I think she's going to be great.
Yeah.
I know you two probably know more than me about Bachelor Nation, but what are your thoughts about Matt James as the Bachelor?
He is so cute. So oh my cute. Gosh.
Maybe one of the hottest Bachelors they've ever had.
Oh, 100%. And from the way that his friends talk about him, I think he's going to be a really great stand-up guy. And it's, you know, it's about time that world did that, because, The Bachelor it's been just a bunch of white people. And I'm really happy that they finally made that decision. And, you know, I'm really excited to see him in like a bathing suit as well.
Yes, we're going to need because when it shows them getting ready and they shower and it's like tasteful, we're going to need that. Like, oh my God. And especially if they do it like they do Bachelorette where it's on a resort, he'll be in a suit every episode.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
And he sounds like a really nice guy too. Yeah. As well.
So I didn't realize they're not doing it at the Bachelor Mansion.
No, it's going to be weird without the Bachelor Mansion.
No. Yeah. The only other time they didn't was with Emily Maynard when they did it in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Good memory.
I forgot about that completely, but I did watch that season.
I was oddly attached to her. I don't know. Yeah. I think that she was like really strong in her moment when she was like, get the F out or whatever. That was like a moment.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love the Bachelor and Bachelorette.
I know. It's so fun.
I love it so much. We could talk about it forever. Wait, I do have to ask you a question because I feel like we normally ask this earlier. We like to talk to our guests about a Ring of Keys moment as it relates to a life in the arts. Do you feel like you had one of those?
Absolutely. Well, let me first start with saying that I grew up and my uncle was a performer. So I went to go see him in shows. He brought me the first live show I saw was The Wizard of Oz at Radio City Music Hall when I was probably 3 or 4 years old. And I don't really remember much, but I remember like a house like lifting up and like floating over the mezzanine. Maybe that didn't actually happen, but in my 3-4-year-old brain, it did. It happened. And I loved it, but, I knew that I wanted to be on stage from the moment that I could tell my parents that in words. But I think what really solidified it for me, my Ring of Keys, was seeing the movie musical Gypsy starring Miss Natalie Wood. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm like a diehard fan of hers. I just talk about magnetic on film. But that show and that role and those characters, Mama Rose and everything. But I just kind of became so fascinated with her and just following her career. So like when I was probably my first job, when I was on Mamma Mia, I got one of her biographies and I read it through, but I watched her movies. This is what I like to do with biographies. I watch the movies of the person as I'm reading. So I can kind of like understand where they were in their life, right? You know, as an actor, like what were they bringing in? You know, what relationships were they in? What was their family dynamic like? Did they have children? Because I feel like for me, that also plays into my method of acting, you know? And I just find it really fascinating to watch actors and knowing where they are or where they were at that time in their personal lives.
That is brilliant.
I do it now with like current stuff. Like I'll IMDb, like, I mean, that's like my favorite website ever. But if I watch a movie, I'll IMDb like the year and try and understand like where they were. And then I'll start researching like what they were doing during that year. And I just find it so wild to think in that way.
You're like a dramaturg. Oh, I love that.
Maybe. I don't know.
Did you watch the HBO documentary about Natalie Wood? We started it and for some reason just didn't get, like, we got interrupted or something. Another sad ending there.
I know. Very connected with Naya in that way. Water.
Yeah.
Which was so weird that like Natalie always had that kind of premonition, or her mom had that premonition that she was going to die in water. So she always kept Natalie from the water. And then she ended up drowning in water, or possibly something else may have happened. Which, speaking of the HBO documentary, I felt like it was very much produced by the Wagners. That's how it came across to me, which is all great because you should always hear both sides of the story. But there's one side, there's the other side, and then there's the truth. So we will probably never know. And sadly, and as well as like with Naya, like we won't really know or understand what really happened. So, but it's fascinating to me.
It is fascinating. I mean, and with Natalie, it's like, she was on the boat with two guys,
Christopher Walken.
They know what happened. And it's to me, I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but just thinking about it.
Oh yeah.
There was something going on. I mean, come on.
Something happened. You know, what's really crazy. It's the first time I was reading it. I put it next to me because I wanted to show you how like beat up and old it is. It's like coming apart. But, I was reading this book in the airport when I was on tour. Oh my God, it's totally falling apart. In the airport when I was on tour with Mamma Mia, and I was sitting there like this and Robert Wagner walked by me.
No, stop it.
So I was like, like I didn't know what to do. I wish social media was there then, because I would have been like, story time. I mean, it was crazy. I've always felt very like weirdly connected with her, like in this like spirit kind of way. And maybe that's just my own like wishful thinking, but like it was crazy to for that to happen.
That is insane. That's also so beautiful. I mean, like, she was remarkable. And I mean, I'm really honestly only familiar with her from some of those old movies, like, of course, West Side Story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did Rebel Without a Cause?
So good. So many.
Yeah. And she got an Oscar nomination for it. And I remember there was a story about, like, the director didn't see her in the role. And then she got, there was like some, she ended up in the hospital for some wild night out or something. And he like ran to the hospital and he was like, okay, I think I can see the like grit in you, the angst. Like, I think you can play this part now. I probably just butchered that story, but I remember reading something like that once where that's how she ended up getting the role in Rebel. Cause everyone saw her as this like sweet ingenue.
She had such a hard time in her career getting those like grittier roles. Because everybody viewed her as this like perfect kind of placed, like a proper type of like a girl, I guess, you know, or playing those grown up, like woman roles, you know. She had a hard time, like she was still in braids when she was like 18 years old, trying like playing kids. And it was probably very frustrating for her, I can imagine. And it's the same in our industry too. It's like once you're pigeonholed into this type, you know, it's very hard to prove to directors, producers, and people that you can do other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, has that been a struggle for you? Do you think that people will see Elphaba? Because I know that you'll post about like going to different dance calls or auditions.
Yeah.
You would when they still were happening.
Right.
Would that be something that would kind of be something you'd have to overcome?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, like my career has changed so much in that, or my priorities have changed so much in my real life that, I mean, I am pushing and I'm pounding the pavement when I can. But it is more like selective at this point. And not that I wouldn't take a job, because I truly believe in like take the opportunities that we're given, and we're all so lucky to be working. Yes, I think, you know, I'm the longest running Elphaba for like 13 years, well, 12, and not longest running Elphaba. I'm the longest, I guess, person that's played it for this many years.
Yes.
That's what people know who I am, you know. I would love to be in like a traditional musical theater show and dance and sing at the same time. Like Sutton Foster is another, like, I want to be her like standby, not in The Music Man, because I wouldn't be right for that show. but like anything that she's done, like Millie, or you know, I mean anything that where she's like, that's like the type that I would like to do. But I think it is hard. It's hard. I don't know. I think a lot of actors have a really hard time like trying to be like, hey, I'm a dancer, but I can sing. No, I want to understudy this role. It's very difficult. It does take time.
Especially if, and like, I know nothing about your representation, but it's like, especially if your representation keeps putting you up for the same type of roles over and over again, I can imagine it would be hard to even be seen.
I mean, it's tough, and it's, there's so many other elements that go into casting that aren't even necessarily geared towards like your talent or your type. Like there's just so many elements to the casting world that like I'm not even aware of. So I really just like, I went to that Hamilton open dance call, like, because I was like, I love Hamilton. I treated it more like, you know what, I want to see if my body is still working in this way. And I treated it as like a free, awesome dance class. And I got to learn this awesome choreography. And when I left the room, it was like, okay, that's done. You know, like maybe something will come of it someday down the road. But you know, I was like, that's kind of how you have to treat this world, so that you're not like completely beaten down all the time, because you hear no all the time.
And I definitely don't think I would have a thick skin for it. I mean, This is top of mind, and we might end up cutting this out of this, but we got a no from someone that we had really been chasing for a long time to record an episode with, and I was devastated. And I was like, you know, thank goodness I'm not a performer, because getting told no sucks so badly. And you're like, well, I don't know why they would say no. I see it a certain way. But like you said, the casting side, there's so many things that go into it. There might be something, it might be because of who's playing opposite.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're not the right height. It's just so fascinating and sad.
I know. And it's hard not to take it personally, because this is like what you love to do. And you put your heart and soul into it, which makes it very different than like the business world, where when you hear no, it's like, okay, well, you know, fact A, fact B, fact C, fact D, like come into play. But, you know, like being told no for your podcast, or being told no at an audition, when you didn't get it, you're like, well, what's wrong with me? That's the first thing that kind of like starts to circle in your brain. And, you know, I'm not saying I don't do that anymore, because I absolutely do. But it's like, it's that whole saying where it's like, you know, you really can't judge a book by its cover. And it goes through all these different, in all different ways, because you have no idea what that person who said no to you would, what they're doing, what they're going through, what they're trying to like portray in their career, or, you know, whatever it, the story may be. You just never know. You can't take it, can't let it hurt.
You are so wise, and Jules is so lucky to have a mother like you who will be able to instill these lessons, because as an actress and a dancer, and you probably have just experienced so much and grown so much, that she's going to have just like those endless, you know, like in Full House when like Danny Tanner would like sit down and like talk to the girls and the sad violins would start playing. Like, you're going to be able to have those amazing life talks with her, and she's lucky. That's,
you know, thank you. That's so sweet for you to say, because most days I feel like I'm failing as a parent. I mean, this time has been very challenging with everything going on in the world, and for a parent of a very small child, you know, and being stuck inside for hours, days, at end, it's been very challenging. But, you know, she teaches me, and I listen to a lot of podcasts. I have a lot of like, I do a lot of research and just try to stay as honest with her as possible and talk to her so she feels safe talking to me. I just always want her to feel like she can talk to me, because as a kid, that's like something like you can sometimes be scared to talk to your parents about things. And I just always want to have an open, honest conversation for her to come to. So, and you know, it's hard, it's difficult, especially when your child is like climbing on the walls and like jumping off the couch and screaming at the top of their lungs. For no reason at all.
Do you think that she has performing in her future? I know she's an artist, as we see by her portrait, but
I think she could if she wants. I would never push that on her, but she definitely has like an ear for music. Like she has good rhythm. Like I can tell that she keeps in with a beat. She has really good pitch. But she's more just engaging in general. Like if we're walking down the street, she'll be like, hey, how you doing? Like, can I pet your dog? and I don't know if like, I've been doing these like cooking videos with her.
Yeah, they're so cute.
Oh my God. She's just so funny. She's hysterical and so like animated in her face. I don't know. We'll see what she ends up like gravitating towards, but I don't know. She's just a dynamic lady, little lady.
She's fierce. I love it. Okay, so we're running towards the end of this episode, which I'm like so sad about, but we like to wrap up on a dose of drama, which I know we've been like kind of dramatic this episode in general. So if you don't have anything new, like totally get it. But, you know, it could be a piece of content you're consuming or anything going on in your life or the world that's just top of mind. And, I'm going to start because it's like kind of in theme with what we've been talking about a little bit. But so in addition to The Bachelorette starting filming last week, The Real Housewives of Orange County and New Jersey are also starting up with filming their seasons. And I'm happy because I'm like, the idea of normalcy resuming makes me feel excited and comforted in a lot of ways. And then my drama, what makes me feel dramatic about it is the other side of that is it makes me feel absolutely terrified because aside from like social distancing and more testing becoming available, nothing's changed in terms of the virus. So although things seem to be going back to normal, quote unquote, it does make me a little bit nervous that filming on these projects are coming. And like, I don't see the Real Housewives wearing masks to film their show, you know? So unless they're like being super quarantined when they're filming it, I am like so intrigued to see how it all shakes out. But I don't know, filming a reality show during a pandemic, I mean, it's not for me, but I'll certainly watch it later. So weird.
I don't know how they're going to do that. They're drama.
Drama.
A lot of drama.
I spent my early quarantine watching Real Housewives of New York, and then I went on to Beverly Hills, and now I'm on Potomac, and it's too much Bravo. Like, I need to like switch it up.
I didn't even know Potomac existed.
Me neither.
Until I walked in on Connor watching it last night. Yeah.
They bring it in a way that the others don't, because unlike New York and Beverly Hills, where there's like a sense of celebrity, these are true, you know, Maryland-based housewives that aren't in I don't know, they're not on both sides of the coast where like the entertainment hubs are, and there's not like a sense of celebrity there. So watching them interact, it does feel a lot more natural in a way. I mean, now I'm on like season two and they understand they're on a reality show now and they understand how people react to them, which is always interesting to watch like a first season compared to a second. But it's good. Like, they are very authentic, at least so far. So
I'll have to go and watch that. I catch up with Real Housewives. Like, I haven't like watched seasons through unless it was New York I did, and New Jersey I did at the beginning. They were drama. Drama. I just want to say that word all the time.
We love it.
That's why we named our podcast Drama, because it was a catchphrase that we always had. We'd always just say it in reaction to everything. And so we were like, when we were thinking of the title of the podcast, we were like, well, it has to be drama, because not only is it a catchphrase, but it encapsulates pop culture and life and theater, and it's like perfect for what we want to talk about.
Hashtag so. Drama.
Hashtag drama.
Yes. Dylan or Jenny, do you have a dose of drama?
So I guess I don't really have drama happening that I can really talk about, but I guess
a blessing.
I know, a blessing it is. You know, just the normal pandemic / world kind of falling apart. But I have been finding myself needing to watch movies and indulge in like TV shows that are comforting to me. Like, I haven't really been able to like branch out into new material that much, because especially if it's like really heavy. So I've been like, you know, watching Friends because it's on HBO Max now.
Yes, yes, yes.
They took it off of Netflix. P.S. This is something that my standby partner in crime, Brittany Johnson, and I have in common, but we are obsessed with Friends. So that has been like on my television in the background for this entire like pandemic time, because it just gives me like a sense of like, I don't know, relaxation. And it's always kind of been that way in my life. But yeah, Brittany and I, we always wanted to start like a Friends trivia kind of thing. I guess Friends is like kind of not, it's before your time. I don't know if you guys indulged in it very much, but
we'd always have it on, like you're talking about, in the background when we had our first apartment together in Columbus, Ohio. We would because it was always on Nick at Night. Like, it would just, they would air it like in a couple hour blocks, and whether we were watching it or not, it was just sort of on. I couldn't tell you what was happening, but it is a sense of comfort. And I say that hesitantly because I've never really watched it, and I can't say like, oh, I know all the characters and everything about it. But that's kind of how I feel about like RuPaul's Drag Race, or just putting on like movies and things like that that I've seen already.
Yeah.
And so it's not like I'm going to be disappointed all over again with something, or heartbroken all over again when there's enough of that going on that.
Yeah.
Because you know how it
ends. I know, because you know how it ends, and you're prepared for it. And this whole time has been, how is this going to end? Like, how is the pandemic going to end? How is the Black Lives Matter movement, hopefully there's a lot of change coming in this world for good, because how is this going to end? Like, I mean, that's like the question now. And I think, like, you know, obviously I'm doing doses of reading and educating myself as well during this time, like politically so much, but, and trying to, but I have to do it in doses because self-care is so important right now. And friends, just like, I don't know, there's some, you know, and therapy, but friends is something that like really levels me out for some reason. It like helps me relax. So
I love that.
It's not really drama, but that's my, I mean, the rest of the world is drama right now. So that's what I do to negate the drama.
No, that's, that 100% speaks to us. We talk about things like that all the time. We'll be like, we have all these movies like on our HBO watch list or our Netflix queue. And it's like movies like The Theory of Everything or things like that. And I'm like, I just don't have the heart right now to watch these like heavy Oscar movies. Like I have to be in a certain mood. Like it's, I'd rather watch something simple and...
Yeah, lighthearted. I watched that Amy Schumer documentary, The Expecting Amy. Have you guys seen it?
No, but I love.
No,
I love her,
and
it's so good. And as a mom, you're just like, F yes, you are a powerful woman who made life. And I mean, I was very lucky. I had a very easy pregnancy. And I cannot imagine what she went through. But if that, like, real life stuff is... I can find myself watching stuff like that. Oh my God. Like talk about a dramatic pregnancy, like or traumatic pregnancy, but she did it.
I remember. Yes. And does she have a daughter or a son?
A son. Yeah, she has a son.
Okay.
And he has like a really cute name.
Oh my God. I miss her show.
I miss like, yeah, I just miss things. I miss everything.
I miss everything.
Well, I agree with you, Jenny. My dose of drama is a plea to Twitter support because I was updating our social media accounts this past week and I was like, oh, like what was the day we launched the podcast? I'll make that the birthday on our Twitter account. And so it was like November 4th, 2019. And I changed it. And then moments later, Twitter emailed me and said, you're underneath our age requirement of being 13 years old. We have deactivated your account and suspended it. You can make an appeal to this, but you violated our terms of service. And I'm
I
have to laugh. I have to laugh. But I immediately, like, you had to, like, take a picture of your license to prove that you're over 13. And it's been... I hope by the time this episode comes out, it will be back because, you know, we got to spread the good word about this episode. Thank God our Instagram is still out there, but it is drama and I'm so sad that our Twitter is gone. And if it's gone forever, maybe a new one will have to be started, but I have a good feeling it'll be back.
Oh, darn. That I kind of have like stopped using Twitter. Like, I don't know the last time I posted, like it's been years, but yeah, that's a lot of work for like something so superficial. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's like,
yes,
how could like a 1-year-old type in their birthday on a computer? Like, it's
right.
Just, that's not possible.
Ridiculous. But you know,
God, I made a MySpace on a fake email address in 2005. So technology has changed so much with how they react to creating accounts and changing information.
Those people that must be on the computer, like looking for people with like using music that can't go on and then they like shut me down. Like, that's so much, a lot.
Oh yeah, that's why we don't put any music in the podcast that is like the theme song my boyfriend wrote, so we own that, but like we just don't want to get like slapped with fines one day or like,
yeah.
People say there's like that 30-second rule that you can play up to 30 seconds of something, but I think that's made up.
Who knows? Better safe than sorry.
Yes, 100%.
Just like wearing a mask, better safe than sorry. Wear a damn mask.
Safe than sorry. Mm-hmm. But speaking of Twitter and social media, everyone should follow you, Jenny, at Jenny DeNoia. It's DeNoia, right? I'm getting that right.
Okay. DeNoia.
Mm-hmm. And of course, follow at The Drama Podcast on Instagram for now.
And search for us on Twitter. Hopefully we'll be back by the time everybody hears this episode.
But Jenny, thank you so much for doing this. We are such fans, and I am unabashedly going to say that, because it is truly surreal to sit here and talk to you when I've watched videos of you on YouTube for years, all on public press performances, of course.
Of course, only.
Especially, you did something with Ryan McCartan. Like the Pierre, Broadway at the Pierre, something like that. It was like, you guys.
That was with Michael Campagno.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was fun.
You did As Long As You're Mine with Ryan at something, though.
Yeah, at the Time Warner building. We did like a, it's kind of like an offset to like Broadway in the Park kind of thing. They do like a series of Broadway shows that perform there.
Yes. It was amazing. Like, absolutely amazing.
And that was my only time ever performing with him. I never went on. Did I go on with him? See, this is my brain. I can't remember. I've wanted to make a list of all the people I've done the show with, and I'm like, I can't remember.
I was going to say you should, because you've definitely played opposite more Fieros and Glindas and with everyone than anyone else.
Like, you name them, and I probably have done the show with them at some point, but I won't be able to tell you, like, where or when.
Or stood by for them, honestly, too, because did you stand by for Dee in Chicago?
Yes. Well, Dee is she's a dear friend, but she's like my alphaba when you think about those people. Because when I joined Chicago, sorry, this is going on forever.
No.
She was the standby and I was in the ensemble, and I watched her go from standby to getting moved up. She replaced Christy Cates, I believe.
She was our first alphaba.
Oh, mine too. yeah, I know. How funny is that? But I stood by for her in Chicago, and because I eventually became the standby there, and then I stood by for her in New York, and I just love her. She's kind of like in that same, like, I don't know, she's just a good human in general, like, and I adore her, and she's super talented. I learned a lot from her.
Oh, that's so special. From everything I've heard about the Green Girl Sisterhood of all the Elphabas, it is just like a club I will never be a part of, and I respect that, but like, I envy it from afar. Like,
it's a club that needs to be real. Like, there needs to be like a full support group for Elphabas. And there is. Like, we all support each other. And I think it's like, once you play this role, you just get it. There's something that people just can't understand. What it's like to play this role, and that could be its own show in itself. But yeah, it's a wonderful sisterhood that I'm very proud to be a part of.
Well, we're so thankful for you and your talent and everything you've brought to the world over this. I mean, it's been like what, 13 years. So the best is yet to come, and Jules will get to see it all and listen to this one day. And
I hope so. That'll be so cool.
Well, thank you, Jenny. You are amazing. And everyone, follow Jenny. Follow me at Connor McDowell and Dylan at Dylan McDowell. And hopefully our Twitter comes back. Dylan.
Yes, Connor. I think that I'll just see you next time.
Drama.
Drama.